I have a question for you. Do you know what is Diwali? What is Diwali? Would you like to know what is Diwali? Okay, that's what we're going to speak about. What is Diwali? Let's start with what Prabhupada said about what is Diwali. Diwali, he wrote a letter in 1974 or something like that to answer his disciples' questions. What's Diwali? He said Diwali is a corruption, or like corruption of the word Deepa Vali. Deepa meaning he identified. Deepa meaning lamps. And Vali meaning a gathering or a cluster, a row, a string. And the way that Prabhupada wrote it, because, you know, he grew up in India too, rather than saying it, you know, the modern meaning of what Diwali is, he said Diwali, originally Diwali was a festival held upon the return of Lord Ramachandra to Ayodhya. That's where it started. And that's because after 14 years of exile, Ram was returning, and he was returning back to Ayodhya from the southerly direction on the Vimana of Indra that had been captured by Kamsa, Ravana. What was the name of the Vimana? Vipaksha or something like that?
Pushpaka.
Okay, that one. Said it too fast.
Pushpaka.
Pushpaka Vimana, thank you. If you say it slower, I can catch it. Pushpaka Vimana. And it was at night. And so there are different versions of that return. One that I like very much is Ramchandra stopped the Pushpaka Vimana south of the city, because he wanted to find out what, after 14 years, was Bharat's mood still the same? A lot can happen in 14 years. Did he still want Ram to rule? Because if he wanted to rule, Ram was very happy that he would rule. So he stopped the Vimana, a little reconnaissance to find out what was Bharat's mood. Bharat heard that Ram was returning, and it was a celebration. Make all arrangements for the coronation of Ram so he can resume the rule of the throne of Dasarath. Fidelity to his word and his wish to honor his elder brother. In history, things like that happen a little differently. Somebody gets a position, they become attached to that position. But anyway, so then Ram resumed his journey, and as he was entering Ayodhya, the whole city at night, because he didn't have street lights, was lamps. And then They'll be like many in many cultures. Many major festivals started with a religious purpose, and then it got corrupted, you know, more than corrupted. This became an opportunity for people to have parties. Now, because the culture of India is more religious than other places of the world, the parties still have, you know, they Hinduize it and try to connect it with something. It's got, you know, looks like maybe it has something to do with religion. But at least some of the histories say, a number of the histories say, that in addition to Ram's return to Ayodhya, it's as though the reunion of the citizens for their lost or long gone king. So Sambhog, after a long vipralamba, after a long separation. There seems to be something in the... Now this isn't what Prabhupada said, what I'm about to say. But what histories say is that the killing of Narakasura took place on this day also. Do you know who is Narakasura? Who is Narakasura? Tell him softly. Tell him. See, he'll examine to see if you know. Well, at least he's not eating his dhoti right now. That was going on before. So. Do you know who is Narakasura? No. You can explain to him. Narakasura. Narakasura. Narakasura was the demon who had captured how many princesses? 16,000. 16,000. How many wives did Krishna have? 16,108. So 16,100 princesses. And another name for Narakasura is Bhomasura. And Bhomasura, or Narakasura, was Krishna's son. Did you know that? Yes, you knew that. How did that happen? When Lord Varaha was rescuing the earth. You know this one? A son was born, Varaha, and Bhumi, and his name was Bhoma. So he was as Krishna's own son, but even Krishna's own son, because he had bad association. And with bad association, he became bad. Because we take on the association of those with whom we associate. So we want good association, not bad association. So he had kidnapped these 16,100 queens. They wouldn't submit to him, but they were imprisoned and they were praying to Krishna to give them relief, to rescue them. So Krishna came, and as he approached the big palace of Narakasura, what happened? There was a moat around the palace, and within the moat was another demon named you read Krishna book with him? Oh, okay, that explains. The other demon's name was? I forget his name also. Ladies, you read Krishna book. Who was the demon that was in the moat that Krishna killed? Anyone? Huh? not Banasura. He was the bad association for Boma. Huh? I forget his name. He came out of the moat. Krishna killed him. Krishna. Huh? Mura. Very good. The Mura demon. Thank you. Mura demon. And then Krishna killed Narakasura, his own son. And there's prayers and there's statements made by Krishna as well, that even he's my own son, if he acts in ways that are contrary, I will destroy them. If they violate my devotee, I'll protect my devotee. So the princesses then were staring at Krishna, all 16,100 of them. And then they poured their hearts out. Who is going to accept us as husbands? We've been outside of our home for such a long period of time, and in our culture no one will accept us as queens. Only you can save us. Please accept us as your wives. Krishna agreed. Now here's a Lalita Madhava by Rupa Goswami explanation. It appears multiple times in Lalita Madhava where the gopis were so much desirous of having Krishna as their husband, they expanded themselves into these, not just the 16,100, but the 16,108 queens were all but expansions of the gopis. It's presented in a number of mysterious ways, and in really mysterious ways, in Rupa Goswami's Lalita Madhava. But it's on that day Krishna agreed to marry these, on Diwali day, Krishna agreed to marry the 16,100 princesses. Before I read that from Rupa Goswami, I was wondering, does it say anything about the kings of whom they were the princesses? And that's a lot of princesses. One would think the kings, 16,108 kings, would be in an uproar that their daughters had been kidnapped by one same person. They would get together and have a, whatever you do when you're kings, you know, combined war against one guy. They were expansions of the gopis to fulfill their desire. Amazing, huh? And another explanation in the histories is that when Vamana subdued Bali, because Bali was an enemy of Indra. Although he wasn't really like an inimical kind of enemy of Indra, but he was in the Daitya dynasty. And so with his military strength, he overcame all the members of the heavenly region. And he was occupying the palace of Indra. It's similar to what Hiranyakashipu had done. So we know from Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 3 that whenever the enemies of Indra are overwhelming him, an incarnation of Lord Vishnu appears. Specifically, the language is used like that. So Vamana came at the request of the demigods headed by Indra when they went to Lord Vishnu and pleaded for relief from this person, terrible person, Bali. But it turns out Bali wasn't a terrible person. Quite different. He was in a role of the enemy of Indra, but he was an exalted person. So in one sense, each of these, now this is where it starts to get, we're going even further down, it starts to get Hindu, meaning, you know, blurry. You know, the Diwali represents victory of good over evil, and, you know, like that. The bad gets pushed down, so Bali got pushed down. But he got pushed down to a lower planetary region with the personality Godhead as his protector, at his gate. So it's a little, we don't go down that far. Just on Diwali Day, these various... because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita these three reasons why he appears. So these are, each of them are appearances or activities of the personality of Godhead. Pritranaya sadhanam vinashaya shaduskritam. Good over evil. But it's the personality of Godhead giving the citizens of Ayodhya the relief of their intense separation from him. Narakasura being killed indicates, from Rupa Goswami's perspective, the opportunity for these 16,100 princesses to have Krishna as their husband. Now we'll go to Vrindavan. And in Vrindavan, at least two of the pastimes that took place in Vrindavan were on Akadasi, excuse me, on Diwali Day. One of them took place along the side of Govardhan Hill. So when you do Govardhan Parikrama, commonly, at least, you know, in ISKCON, because the road that comes in from where we stay, there's a road that goes right up to the north side of Govardhan Hill, on the east side, north end. So there's a big bus parking lot, and the road goes right there. So often devotees will start just on the other side of Radhakund Shyamakund and go down, and then southern tip and go up, cut across through Radhakund Shyamakund and go to the bus. That's one. Then another is, because it's a nice place to begin, Kusum Sarovar. So going down the eastern side of Govardhan Hill, it's Kusum Sarovar. And after Kusum Sarovar, the very next place is Shamvan. And Shamvan has in it, or in that area, the forest of trees in that area, is Ratna Singhasan, a jeweled throne where Radha would sit. And on Diwali Day, Radha and Krishna and the gopis and Balaram were engaged in having a Diwali festival in Shamvan. When Shankachuda came along, Shankachuda lived in Mathura, and he was very wealthy. So he decorated himself in very wealthy looking garments. He had a nice turban with a nice big jewel on his turban, and he was either an associate or a worshipper of Kuvera. So he was into wealth, and he was, needless to say, one could imagine he was quite proud. So when he was walking in that area and he saw the gopis, and he considered Krishna and Balaram were like, you know, insignificant, ordinary boys. So, and he saw the gopis, very, very, most exquisitely beautiful. So he gathered a bunch of them and started moving away with them, just like Krishna and Balaram weren't even there. And they were very surprised, and Krishna and Balaram were just watching. And they began crying aloud for Krishna, please help us. And Shankarachuda was arrogantly saying, this little boy can't do anything. You're suitable for my enjoyment. So Krishna then became very angry, and he told Balaram, you guard the rest of the gopis, I'm going to go take care of him. And Krishna started charging after him, and Shankarachuda recognized he's not just an ordinary boy. So he began running, and Krishna was running after him. And Krishna gave a good chase. Krishna let him run for a long distance. They made it all the way to Suryakund, one of the favorite places where Radharani would regularly go and worship the sun god. And he let Shankarachuda have it, and he was dead. And he took the jewel from his turban, and when he returned, he entrusted the jewel, brought the gopis back, and then he had left the gopis, and he had just run. So the gopis were now in the care of Balaram, and he gave the jewel to Balaram. And recognizing his position in Krishna's relationship with him. Privately, Balaram gave the jewel to Radharani. He didn't want Krishna to know. He gave the jewel to Radharani. That took place on Diwali Day. And the Damodar Leela also took place on Diwali Day. Did you know that? Now you know that. Diwali Day. There are many different renderings, but one of them that's very, very nice is, especially nice, is by Jiva Goswami. And I'm going to narrate that a little bit. Jiva Goswami writes, it was Diwali Day. Mother Jasoda began to think, my assistant gopis, they must not know how to make butter properly. Because Krishna's always getting these reports, at least. Krishna's going here and going there and stealing butter from other storerooms of other householders. I'm not sure it's true, but if it's true, it's probably because they don't know how to make butter properly. So she decided, it's Diwali Day, I'll give them the day off. They can go with their families and have their festivals and light their lamps, and I'll make the butter for Krishna today. So Jiva Goswami writes that she was so expert, Mother Jasoda. She knew exactly which grasses with which cows would make what flavor milk. She was expert. So what she did was something that I've never heard of before. Of the 900,000 cows, she had selected 10,000 cows that were the very best. And she milked those cows and then fed 1,000 of those 10,000 cows, the very, very best of the 10,000, milk from the 10,000 cows. I've never heard of feeding a cow milk, but anyway, that's what Jiva Goswami wrote. And then she milked those 1,000 cows and fed the milk from those 1,000 cows to the 100 of those 1,000 cows that were very, very, very special, and of course fed them just the right grasses from the right places so that the milk would be so flavorful. And then she converted the milk into yogurt, because she knew that butter made churned from yogurt was even better butter than milk producing butter. So she began churning on Diwali Day. And his description was, she had bangles on her arms, that as she moved the bangles on her arms, it was like cartels. Ching, 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 ching. And the paddle of the butter churn was like a mridanga. Boom, boom, ching, 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 boom, boom, ching, ching, ching. She was a one-man band. And she would just sing songs of Krishna's pastimes. She didn't need a songbook. Spontaneously, she would just sing songs appreciating Krishna. Boom, boom, ching, 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 boom, boom, ching, ching, ching. And perspiration was coming down her forehead, but she was not paying any attention to that. She was just in the ecstasy of preparing butter for darling Krishna. You get the scene. Diwali Day. No firecrackers either. Krishna was asleep. Krishna woke up. And Krishna wanted his mother to feed him her breast milk. So he came toddling over to her, looked up at her, and pulled on her cloth, and she continued. So then he grabbed the rope, like, stop your butter churning, Mother Jasoda, and feed me. So Mother Jasoda stopped her butter churning and picked up Krishna and placed him in her lap with his legs straddling her two sides, putting her hand behind his back and looking directly in Krishna's face. Mothers sometimes do this. But this is not just a mother. This is Mother Yashoda. And the child is not just their darling little child. It's Krishna. I've seen a very beautiful painting of this scene. They're just staring at each other. It's something like that wonderful painting of Sudama when he's seated on Krishna's throne and Krishna is bathing Sudama's feet and Rukmini is looking on and some gopis are over by the door. And from the corner of Krishna's eye, tear is coming and Sudama, a tear is coming and they're just staring at each other with fixed love, expression of love. The role is different. Krishna is bathing his feet. Sudama is taking the role of a brahmana sitting in Krishna's seat. But it's the same exchange of intense affection between mother and child, Krishna and Yashoda. So after some of that, she then begins to breastfeed her child. Meanwhile, you know the story, the Leela, there is butter on the stove, there's milk on the stove that starts to boil over. Jiva Goswami says, it's not that the butter was boiling over. The milk was thinking, personified, the milk was thinking, what's the use of my life? What service can I do for Krishna? Because the affection of Mother Jasoda is unlimited. And the affection that Krishna has for Mother Jasoda is unlimited. What's the use of my even sitting here on the stove getting ready to become something for Krishna's service? Better that I just give up my life. And so the milk started to boil over and to enter into the fire. Jiva Goswami says. Then Mother Yashoda, we know that we can't approach Krishna by speculation. The process of reasoning and logic will never get you to Krishna. But she used her process of reasoning and logic nonetheless of what was the best means of serving Krishna. Her rational faculty worked like this. If the milk on the stove boils over, then it will be spoiled. I can't use that at all. And as far as feeding Krishna, I know he wants to be fed right now. But if I set him down and come back, then I can feed Krishna and the milk on the stove is saved. Rational consideration. So she set Krishna down and she went to rescue the milk. Jiva Goswami writes, the milk began to consider, why should I give Mother Jasoda so much trouble? I'll just simmer down. Another explanation, not Jiva Goswami, is Mother Jasoda was so expert. Once milk starts to boil and boil and boil, it's not just a matter of turn the heat down, because she didn't have, you know, a gas burner either. It was, you know, what was she going to do? She took some water and sprayed with her hand some water over the surface of the milk, and immediately it subsided. Ladies, if that happens, you have this like scene where there's something that starts to boil on the stove, like boil over, just a little water on the surface and it goes down. So she rescued the milk. Meanwhile, Krishna had a transcendental tantrum. He didn't want Mother Jasoda to rescue the milk on the stove. He wanted Mother Jasoda to feed him. So he became Krishna angry. Not like we do. But he was performing a leela. So he took a rock and threw a rock at the butter pot, and the butter pot that Mother Jasoda was churning with broke, and all the yogurt and what milk had, what butter had been formed, leaked onto the ground. But that wasn't enough. Krishna was still hungry, so he went to the storeroom to get some dairy products. Now, usually the paintings show that Balaram was with him. There's no indication that Balaram was with him. Maybe Balaram went with him. So Mother Jasoda came back to the scene of the crime. And she used her rational faculty. This is Damodar Leela. You should be very enthused to hear it. Okay. Deductive logic. The pot was broken. There's a rock by the pot. Krishna's gone. Krishna does naughty things. Krishna broke the pot. She didn't see it. She just did some deductive logic. Krishna broke the pot. And then she started to look for Krishna. Some more deductive logic. Krishna likes butter products. Maybe he's in the butter storeroom. And then she saw little footprints, because the yogurt that had spilled and leaked onto the ground, little buttery footsteps were heading towards the storeroom. So she followed the footsteps, the footprints of Krishna. And when she got to the place where the storeroom was, she saw Krishna with half overturned butter pot, eating butter and feeding butter to the monkeys. Are you a gopi or a monkey? Does she understand? Okay. We'll find out. Krishna was feeding butter to the monkeys. So then we know the rest of the Leela. Mother Jasoda was holding a stick in her hand. So she saw Krishna. So she came out of hiding and confronted Krishna. Krishna began running. And we know from Ishopanishad, when Krishna runs, he can overcome all others running. He's swifter than the mind. That's how fast Krishna is. And Mother Jasoda was following behind Krishna, trying to catch Krishna. But who can catch Krishna? Jiva Goswami writes, the hair, the flowers in Mother Jasoda's hair were falling to the ground. And he said, he writes, the flowers were thinking, why should I burden Mother Jasoda? She's trying to capture Krishna. Let me make her task lighter, will fall to the ground. So the flowers fell to the ground to make it easier for Mother Yashoda to capture Krishna. And from behind she caught Krishna. And then she continued to try to... She threw the stick down. Krishna was crying. She didn't want Krishna to cry. She just wanted Krishna to be taught a lesson. So she put the stick to the ground. And as was the practice at the time, while mothers were doing something, they would keep their child occupied by a little rope tied around their waist while they were doing something. So she was going to use that program. And the rope that she got was too short, more rope, too short. Jiva Goswami writes that Mother Jasoda was the queen of Nanda Maharaj, who was the Brajendra. He was the Indra of all the cowherds, king of cowherds. So she had access to all the ropes and all the storerooms of all of Braja. And she went and gathered miles of rope and tied them together. They were still 2 inches too short. Jiva Goswami writes, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also writes, the reason was Krishna was exhibiting two of his potencies. One, his Icha Shakti, and two, his Sva Shakti. Icha Shakti is desire. Krishna wanted to go back to the storeroom. He didn't want to be bound up by Mother Jasoda. And who can overcome Krishna's Icha Shakti? Try, go right ahead. Krishna's will prevail. And his Sva Shakti, his own internal potency. Mother Jasoda couldn't bind Krishna. But she was very determined. Not like a controlling kind of determined, a motherly, transcendental motherly kind of determined. I have to discipline my son. If he grows up as a thief, who knows what will happen? It's my duty. So when Krishna saw not just her determination, like this is the lesson for us, our determination when we're facing an obstacle in the course of service that we know is something that is to be done, and there's an obstacle that it's just not happening, still with determination and with great affection for Krishna. Krishna withdrew his Icha Shakti and his Sva Shakti, and he exhibited another one. Which one? Mercy. Kripa Shakti. So Mother Jasoda, because of Krishna's exhibiting his Kripa Shakti, she was able to bind him. Prabhupada expresses it this way, Krishna wasn't bound by the ropes of Mother Jasoda, but by Mother Jasoda's love. When the devotee shows such love for the personality of Godhead, as Mother Jasoda had, Krishna becomes obliged. Krishna shows his mercy and submits himself to the devotee. He becomes subservient to the devotee. It's not like the devotee wants, I want to conquer Krishna and make Krishna subservient to me. That will never happen. But through love, then another set of rules are at play. The rule of Krishna's mercy, placing himself at the will of his devotee. It's a very it's a theme within the pastimes of Krishna and the explanation of Krishna's pastimes by our acharyas. Again and again and again, Krishna does like this. So these are pastimes that Krishna performed on Diwali day, along with Ramchandra and Vamana, where auspiciousness comes. So just stepping back from Diwali, people often think it's a day of auspiciousness, but here's why. Krishna is fulfilling his purposes, or Ramchandra is relieving the residents of Ayodhya from their difficulty of feeling separation from him. And throughout India, and even throughout the world, but you know, people from India that are now in different parts of the world, Diwali has a special significance. When I visit in China, I was asking them just recently, is there some festival here in China where you have a festival of lights? And they didn't give me the name of the festival or the meaning behind it or any of those details, but it's the culture is pervasive. And part of the reason for that, the culture being pervasive, not just modern times and technology, it's, you know, ancient India. Ancient India at one time was part of Vedic culture. And a little surprising, but you know, I'm learning little by little China's culture, but the connection between the politically between China and India today, it's horrific. From China's perspective, all of our borders except Japan over here and India over there, we're safe, and they're really like circumspect about, you know, protecting their people. But China is a threat, and India is a threat, and exactly as Prabhupada writes in Second Canto of Bhagavatam Purport, the near war that broke out between China and India over some uninhabitable piece of land, which I imagine is something like what those islands are that Japan and China are fighting over. They're just like meaningless. But it's like, I'm bigger. No, I'm bigger. Oh yeah, well, I'll show you how big we are. And you know, it's. But culturally, there's so much of Vedic culture that was once in China. I'll just share one little piece with you. It's now 6:30. Let's end. first time I went to China, I spent some time in Beijing. And the devotees were saying, would you like to go and see some of the sights? They said, no, thank you. Oh, please come, please come. No. Please come, no. please come, please come. No, no, no. They really wanted me to go, so I said, okay. So then it was, where would you like to go? I said, I don't know. I don't know what the sights are. You know what the sights are. So they're in the down, in the, there's an area of Beijing that's historical. There's the capital, and then there's the old, on this side of the of Big Avenue is the Ming Dynasty, whatever you call it, palace. Huh? You've been there? No. It's the palace of the kings over here. And like all the courtyards and different things. We didn't go there. We went on this side. And this side is the Temple of Heaven. Temple of Heaven in China. So we went there, and one of the first things that struck me was so many people. I'm from New York, and I'm used to seeing lots of people, and it was like three New Yorks in a park on a Tuesday afternoon at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock. We went at an off time because it would be less crowded. You have to pay to get in to a park. And there were a gazillion people all over the place. Like ants in an anthill. They're just like all over the place. And you had to walk about a half a mile to get to the first place. There were three like hills. And over there was a place where the Ming Dynasty emperors would do their austerities before they would come and do their Indra Puja. So you go up this big flight of stairs, and there's the Temple of Heaven over here, and then the Upadevas, and then some history about the Ming Dynasty over in the other one. But you stand in line to go and see an altar, where there's the altar for the King of Heaven, the King of the Sun, the King of the Moon, and the King of the Wind, and the King of Fire, and the King of this, and the Devas. And they would make offerings to the Devas. And then over there is the Upadevas. I mean, they didn't use those terms, but I'm using those terms. And then pictures of the Ming Dynasty and how they did what they did. Then you go back down the stairs and go, over a river, like a stream, and it's like another zillion people. You go to the next, and you go up, and it's the Cosmology Hill. Because I have studied Sariputta's work somewhat, I'm familiar somewhat with what he writes. And Chinese cosmology is almost identical with Vedic cosmology. This one and this one and this three shrines or sort of buildings in which they're depicting Chinese cosmology. And you go down and go another distance, and there's another gazillion people, and to the third one is a place where they would in geometric pattern, there were stones, like flat stones, marble or whatever, arranged in numerology, somebody here, and then somebody there, and somebody there, and somebody there. So in the center is where they would go and speak to the King of Heaven. And over there, and over there, and over there were their urns where they would make sacrifices to the Devas. Jewels, cloth, animals, not very nice, and some other things, and they would offer to the Devas. And over there was the house where the emperor would fast for a day or so before he would come and then propitiate the King of Heaven. And this was going on for a long time, some centuries. And now it's just museum. But at one time it was Vedic culture. It was how the emperor of China ruled as the worshipper of Indra, king of heaven. I was amazed. As I'm speaking about it, I'm still like thinking, this was the theology, and the king embraced the theology that ruled the whole of India, because Beijing historically has always been the capital, at least what part that I know. It's just always been the capital. It hasn't always been so big, but it was always the capital, and they picked it as the capital for protection reasons. They built the wall and, you know, stuff. It was easy to defend from invasion. Anyway, Vedic culture spread everywhere, and so it's not surprising that in China they have a festival of lights. Probably, I'm guessing, connected to Diwali, when Ram returns to Ayodhya. And then it became something else and something else, and now today it is whatever it is. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes that within cultures, their literature as well as their culture stems originally from scripture. Classic literature in a culture is derived, it's just a rendering of that particular time and language of something that's scripturally based. And he gives examples. And that their holidays, their holidays were also originally religious. And because Vedic culture spread all over the world, literally, all over the world, the roots of their holidays and their practices is in Vedic culture. So, well, that's that historical reference is nice. Now, what about us? It's get back to the roots. The purpose of Diwali is to welcome Ram back to rule Ayodhya, welcoming that quality of king, the personality of Godhead, to rule us, to be under his care and protection, Ram Raja. And the feelings of anticipation of, again, meeting with the personality of God, and after we've been so long away from the spiritual position, to eagerly anticipate that condition of our lives where we honor Him and submit to Him and He rules us. That's not going to be the same as Dwarapa Yuga, but it can be the same in principle of accepting the subordinate position to the principles that Ramachandra stood for and taught by his example. And these other mentions of scriptural events. Okay, Hare Krishna. Any comments or discussion? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna Maharaj. We were hearing about Lalita Madhava, Vidagdha Madhava. So what is our understanding about that? Like we
Understanding about what?
The books Lalita Madhava and Vidagdha Madhava.
What's our understanding of the book?
Yes, like, you know, are they like, because we understand they are plays, but are the stories mentioned, are they, did they really happen? Or it's
yes.
Okay, I wanted to...
Rupa Goswami is not interested in fiction. Non-fiction.
I have another question.
Okay.
On, like yesterday we heard...
They're very deep though. They're very deep and mysterious. So, don't think otherwise. Go ahead.
Yesterday we were discussing about how there were some changes which you saw in your lifetime about Bible. There were some modifications happened. Some
people we come across during book distribution, they ask us the same question.
Which question?
That how can you be so sure that Bhagavad Gita did not get modified over the period of time?
Oh, that's we should ask them that question about the Bible. We'll give our answer and then ask them, have you done your homework? So our answer is, we come in a line of disciplic succession. And in our line of disciplic succession, going back decades and centuries, there are commentaries of Bhagavad Gita. And some have taken the time to study the comparative renderings. And the discrepancy in the message of Bhagavad Gita is not so much in the verses themselves, but it's the what do the verses mean. That's where it differs. The versions of Bhagavad Gita of just the verses are very standard. And our acharyas over that period of time, they have accepted that. It's, you know, the texts are there in Sanskrit, handwritten ones from long, 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 long ago. Then the commentaries. Okay. Anything else? Yes. The Damodar Leela.
Last line of Damodar Leela, Damodar Ashtakam, that Namo Radhikaya Pratadi Priyaya, means Radharani is included in that pastime.
Yeah.
How, like, when, where?
That's a nice question. In Hari Bhakti Vilas, it mentions that the Damodar Leela, the Damodar month, should be honored in relation to Radharani, which is, so technically we're observing in ISKCON Yasoda Damodar Leela. There's a Radha Damodar Leela also, and I'd have to do a little research, but the best that I can remember is that it's an exchange between Radha and Krishna, where Krishna is doing one of his pranks and Radha and the gopis reprimand him by tying him around the waist with something, cloth or something, to bind Krishna around the waist. And therefore, Radha Damodar Leela. But we follow what Prabhupada has given us, these wonderful Damodarastakam prayers and his translation of the Damodarastakam prayers, which, by the way, are so much more beautiful than sweet. His translation of those prayers are so much more sweet and lyrical than the one that is in the songbook. I have like an issue about this. Personal issue. Because at certain points in time, Achyutananda and Jaisachinandana learned Sanskrit and they translated verses, songs that Prabhupada had already translated, and they were more literal, but less melodious and sweet, less rasika. I like the ones that Prabhupada translated. But we follow that way. Although, as mentioned, Hari Bhakti Vilas says worship of Radha should also be there. Or not should also, should be there. Okay? Anything else? Okay. Thank you all very much. Prabhupada Ki Jai.